So it turns out that Jesus is harder to outwit than a peasant should be. That's one way, and maybe the best way, of reading why everybody walks away amazed at the end of this story in Matthew's gospel. Jesus has the people with him, but he's looked on with suspicion or outright hostility by people who have something to lose in the system. So those people bring him a question, and it's a question that is really carefully crafted to put Jesus at risk. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? That was a question of Torah that was floating around in Jesus' world. But it's hard to take this as a sincere question, because you don't get to be somebody who others regard as a Herodian. Herodian as in Herod. You don't get to be that sort of person by not paying your taxes. At this very moment, as Jesus is speaking to them, one of Herod's sons is literally minting coins with the face of the emperor on them at Caesarea Philippi. Herodians pay their taxes. But when Jesus was a little boy, maybe 6, maybe 7, the first movement against Roman rule over his people sprung up violently when Rome attempted a census to figure out the taxes that would be extracted by its occupation government. Acceptance of the census and acceptance of the tax, the movement that opposed it held, was acceptance of Roman rule. And acceptance of Roman rule was disloyalty to the God of Israel. You couldn't do both. You couldn't pay your taxes and say that God was king. But everybody ended up paying, because the force of Roman arms was awfully persuasive. But the question never went away. And taxes, paying taxes, not paying taxes, remained a language of resistance and complicity that was understood by common people and by those who governed them. So this is a really dangerous conversation to find yourself in. The preface to the question they ask Jesus: you're a sincere person. You're a person without partiality. You're a teacher of the way of God. It's a way of walking Jesus into a trap, saying, we've heard about the absolute integrity of your teaching, which makes you the perfect person to unpack this question for us. Here's a megaphone. Why don't you tell us all what you think? It doesn't sound like hostility, but it is. It's a trap. Because if Jesus says yes to the question, yes to the question they put to him about whether it's lawful to pay the tax, he's aligning himself with the props and the collaborators with empire, and against the zealots who would overthrow it, and against the common people who are following him and who are sort of sagging under the burden of taxation. If he says, no, it's not lawful, he's probably said enough to be crucified. But he's been challenged as a teacher of the law. He's been challenged about how a person is to live properly under the law. And there's no way for him to simply step around it. So he makes a request. He asks his questioners to show him a coin. Show me the coin that's used to pay the tax. And they produce one. Because they're still giving him rope to see what happens. But now he questions them. Whose head is on this and whose title? The emperor's? Well, then it's his, and you should probably give it to him. Jesus has made an answer out of the obvious. The emperor is the lord of coins. And he doesn't explain how that is. He doesn't suggest an explanation for why Caesar has the authority that Caesar does. He simply says how it is. You have the emperor's coins because you move easily in the emperor's economy. And anybody with coins in their pocket is already paying their taxes. It's a serious question, but it hasn't been asked seriously. So we set that aside. But Jesus isn't finished. Because formally, a challenge on a point of law requires that the teacher address the heart of the question. And the heart of the question is, what's our obligation to authority? So Jesus finishes his sentence. Give to God what is God's. Give to God the things that are God's. And everybody nodded their heads and went away amazed at how this ambush had unfolded. But it would have been really helpful if some brave soul would have asked exactly what Jesus meant by give to God the things that are God's. On one level, that's really obvious. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, sings one psalmist. The sea is his, for he made it, and the dry land which his hands had formed, sings another. But if everything's God's, if everything in us and above us and under our feet, if that's all God's, what do we give in response? How do we give in response? And that's where I start thinking about Sabbath. I start thinking about Sabbath. In Genesis, God blessed that seventh day that there was evening and there was morning, because at the end of the sixth day, God had seen that all made things were good. And on the next, he rested in the community of goodness. Rested in the community of things God had made, just watching things become what they were. Just watching the world grow. That's why it's blessed. Because it's the day that God rests in what God made. And the Sabbath commandment in Deuteronomy spells out that the seventh day will be a Sabbath to the Lord. No work, not you or your household or your servants or your ox or your donkey. And afterwards, there will come a whole bunch of rules and interpretations of rules to help people keep the Sabbath well, to figure out how to avoid the kind of work that mars the rest of the Sabbath. But donkeys get a Sabbath too. One morning a week, the donkey is just going to stand there, and nobody's going to tie anything to it. And the donkey will need no further discipline or instruction. Count on them, to just enjoy their donkeyness, completely unminded, until the next morning. Just don't tie anything to it. The ox will not be out there forgetfully turning over the earth. It will not be zigzagging furrows all over the place because his dad used to complain about freeloaders when it was a kid. The ox will not do that. The ox will just be there, something without a name and without a purpose, just munching God's grass, like the beasts of every kind in the garden, whose glassy black eyes had never yet seen a human with an idea when God called them good. And that's rest. That is rest in the simple fact of creatureliness. We were given Sabbath as a way of discovering our relationship to God, to discover again and again the relationship that the rest of creation cannot forget. Jesus will tell the story about the rich fool, the one who builds and fills barns and dies alone in the midst of them, and explain it to people by saying, look at the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. Look at the lilies. The lilies that grow without toiling and without spinning. God feeds them. God clothes them. So Sabbath is trusting that the world is hard, and it is not simple, and it is not neat. It is hard. But at the same time, the grass does grow overnight, thoughtlessly gardened by legions of earthworms, tilling, and that God hears the cries of hungry ravens, whose whole lives, even sometimes their hungry deaths, whose whole lives are about Sabbath, a sort of squawking song of dependence on the God who made them. So what does that have to do with giving? What does that have to do with giving to God what is God's? To give away what we're clutching with anything like joy means there has to be a part of us that can just let the world happen, that can just let God's loving creativity happen, apart from trying to steer it towards productivity and ourselves towards security. There has to be a part of us that lets God's world happen. And I'll tell you, and you've probably seen this for yourselves, some of the most fearlessly generous people I have ever encountered were people whose housing situations were iffy, to say the least. People who rode the bus with their groceries have been some of the most generous people I've ever known in my life. Because there is a connection between our willingness to trust dependence and our freedom to give. And remember that Jesus, even as he spoke to these Pharisees and these Herodians, was preparing to give to God what was God's. He was getting ready to trust his relationship with the Father enough to let the governor and the governor's executioners do what they were going to do and take what they were going to take. To trust the relationship with the Father enough to let the world happen. We have a chance. We have a chance as disciples to practice that kind of freedom. We have a chance to practice dependence with what we give away. We have a chance to choose to accept our identity as creatures made for relationship. As creatures made to share the whole life of God. We have a chance with what we're willing to give away to bear witness that we cannot fall out of God's hand. Amen. Amen.